This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Governor Rick Snyder's eyes appear to be looking east toward the White House, and the House Republican caucus has one less member after a Plainwell representative was kicked out by the Speaker of the House. We're going to discuss some of the political positioning going on in Lansing with Rick Pluta, managing editor and Capitol Bureau chief of the Michigan Public Radio Network. Rick Pluta, thank you for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Gordon.
How serious is Rick Snyder about running for president?
Well, obviously, I cannot read the man's brain and get a sense of what his true purpose is. But certainly, we've been hearing for a while that the governor is at least interested in running for president. And if that is the case, obviously, this would be a very non-traditional and long-shot dark horse candidacy. A lot of what, you know, the idea that they're pinning it on is that Michigan has a good story to tell. We're a comeback state. We are on the cusp of having an unemployment rate that is better than the national average, which is a big change from, you know, what we've seen in the past 20 years. And also the road to the White House, very likely the Republicans will have to win some Midwestern states that they have not in recent elections in order to win, which is one of the reasons why you're seeing all this talk about Scott Walker being such an attractive candidate, John Kasich in Ohio being such an attractive candidate, and Rick Snyder, you know, might also fall into that mold. However, he has not been doing any of the early groundwork. We have not seen him going to Iowa or New Hampshire, you know, something that you kind of have to do. You have to do respectably in those early states just in order to remain viable to the people who fund big presidential campaigns. But Rick Snyder also seems to have an advocate, at least, I don't know if it's an advocate for presidential ambitions, in former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, the billionaire owner of the Bloomberg News Service. Rick Snyder is going to be Mayor Bloomberg's guest at the White House Correspondents' Dinner this coming weekend. And, you know, as we've seen in recent elections, you know, having a billionaire backer certainly can do a lot to, you know, keep you going on the presidential campaign trail. All of that said, though, you know, it could also be sort of a, you know, let's see if we can catch lightning in a bottle. But if not, you know, we're still getting, you know, the story of what's happening in Michigan out there. And, you know, maybe there's something else. Maybe Rick Snyder is a possible ticket balancing prospect for a vice president on the ticket. Or maybe there's a cabinet post, you know, some prominent Washington position that he might be well suited for. It just doesn't hurt to get your name out there. There's just no downside risk on this.
The May 5th ballot proposal is what Rick Snyder's focusing on right now, presumably short term, trying to get that sales tax increase passed. But I wonder,
and if that goes down in flames, that would certainly, you know, very much damage the prospects of someone who wanted to run for president, that kind of a rejection from voters back home.
On the other hand, if it's approved, then his fingerprints are on a tax increase. So does the very presence of that issue on the ballot complicate Rick Snyder's presidential ambitions if he's going to take this seriously?
Well, sure. The conventional wisdom is that to win the Republican nomination, you need to run far to the right, that you need to be very conservative on social issues, which Rick Snyder is not. You need to be very anti-tax, which Rick Snyder has got his fingerprints on a number of tax increases, plus the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare. And so there is a lot to not recommend Rick Snyder to the Republican base. You know, the most loyal of loyal conservative Republicans. The rationale for a Snyder candidacy, like the rationale somewhat for a Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, John Kasich candidacy, are that these are practical conservatives, people who have made concessions in order to get things done.
Rick, what is something we might look for in the next couple weeks or maybe the next couple months that tell us that, yeah, Rick Snyder is taking this seriously and he wants to run for president?
I think probably the biggest thing, and if it happens, we will all be talking about it a lot. At some point, he's going to have to adopt at least some of the conventions of a Republican primary campaign and start visiting those early states like Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Florida.
Let me ask you about Cindy Gamrat, the Republican representative from Plainwell. She has been kicked out of the Republican caucus by the House Speaker Kevin Cotter. Do we know exactly why yet? We've heard some things about you might have leaked some confidential information or leaked the internal workings of House caucus meetings. What went on here?
Well, a technical correction. She has not been kicked out of the caucus. She still is a Republican and a Republican in the Republican caucus. She has been barred, however, from caucus meetings. Both Democrats and Republicans in the House and in the Senate will get together. There are rooms that they have designated for this purpose. They meet behind closed doors to hash out issues, plot strategy. And one of the rules loosely adhered to is that what happens in caucus stays in caucus. Now, I've been covering this place for almost three decades, and I know that the rule of caucus confidentiality is violated on a fairly regular basis. However, Cindy Gamrat, apparently in some postings to Facebook, the House Republican leadership and Speaker Kevin Cotter seemed to think that she kind of went above and beyond. In business vernacular, it would be sharing privileged information. In the vernacular of national security, it might be considered giving aid and comfort to the enemy. And that they say in these Facebook posts that she shared so much information that could only have come from the deliberations within these closed door caucuses that she didn't just violate the rules, she grossly violated the rules. That's the rationale. Cindy Gamrat has said that she doesn't see it that way, and she is reaching out to the Republican leadership to try and, you know, get her seat in the caucus room restored.
Let's assume for the moment here that both people are looking at this honestly, and that is their true, sincere interpretation of what has happened, that the Republican leadership believes that she shared things she shouldn't have, that Cindy Gamrat read the rules and said, hey, I don't see what I've done here. I'm wondering if there is still a basic difference in approach that may be at the root of this, that the House Speaker has to think about getting things done. Cindy Gamrat is part of that Tea Party group that says we want to shine a light on what's happening.
Oh, yeah. And she is, you know, one of the more vocal Tea Party members, maybe one of the most vocal Tea Party members, certainly one of two of the most vocal Tea Party members. She's been very critical of, you know, the Lansing establishment, the House leadership, the House Republican leadership, and Republican leadership in general. She's trying to boost her influence within the party by running for a vacancy on the Republican National Committee, Michigan's Republican National Committee woman slot. And there's obviously a sense among the House Republican leadership that she needs to be reined in.
Could this have an effect on her bid for that seat on the Republican National Committee?
It will almost certainly have an effect on her bid for that Republican National Committee seat. The question is, what effect will that have? Will it, you know, contribute to a narrative that she's not a team player? Or will it contribute to a narrative that she is an independent voice within the Republican Party? And certainly, you know, what we've seen in recent Republican conventions, the delegates who are selected by the Republican Party base to serve as delegates to the conventions seem to, you know, have kind of an affection for Republicans who are willing to kick dirt on the shoes of the establishment.
Could a potential parallel in Congress be Justin Amash, who has clashed many times with House Speaker John Boehner? And for many Republicans in Michigan, that just elevates his stature in their eyes.
What happened to Justin Amash in D.C. made him a folk hero among some elements of the Republican Party. And I would say what happened to Cindy Gamrat and, you know, being barred from the House Republican caucuses has had much the same effect among some elements of the Tea Party here in Michigan. Absolutely.
So, Rick, we are speaking on Wednesday morning. Shortly, within the next few days, you will be headed to Washington, D.C. to cover the oral arguments before the U.S. Supreme Court concerning same-sex marriage, particularly the case that involves Michigan. What will you be looking for when the attorneys for both sides speak before the justices?
All right, well, you know, this is being largely pegged as a case about whether or not there is a basic right to marriage that applies to people in same-sex relationships and their families. I mean, remember, this started out as a lesbian couple that just wanted the right to jointly adopt their two children. And no one is arguing that April DeBoer and Jane Rouse seem to be exceptionally qualified parents. You know, a Bill Schuette in the state acknowledged that point. They say what this is about isn't the right to marry, but who gets to decide things like marriage rights in the states, and that this is something that is left to voters and legislators and should not be declared a basic right by the courts. There is a technical but critical point that I'll be paying attention to, and that is the court will have to do something which is called, you know, applying a level of scrutiny. And what that means in everyday terms is the court has to make a decision on how aggressively the state is required to defend its same-sex marriage ban. The lowest level of scrutiny is something called rational basis. And what that basically says is it doesn't have to be the best decision. It doesn't even really have to be a good decision. It just has to have some rational basis. It has to be reasonable enough, in this case, for voters to have decided 11 years ago that marriage in Michigan should be confined to a man and a woman and not allowed for same-sex couples. And the state and its lead attorney, you know, John Birch, think that if the court decides to go for that low level of obligation to defend it, then it's kind of game over, that the court has to go with Michigan and upholding its ban or the right to enact a ban. What's somewhat more likely to happen is that the court will apply some higher level of scrutiny, what's called intermediate scrutiny, and it's kind of a ladder. At the bottom end, it's kind of easy to defend. It's closer to that rational basis. At the top end, the highest level of scrutiny, and very few laws can survive this, it's called strict scrutiny. It's usually applied to racial discrimination cases. And what that says is what the state is trying to accomplish here is so sweeping and dangerous that you had better have a narrow reason and a large and a significant state interest in order to justify a law, you know, like this one. And so I want to see where on that ladder between the two extremes the court decides that Michigan has to defend its marriage ban. The lower the level of scrutiny, the easier for the state to defend, the harder for the challengers to topple, and the higher it goes, the harder it is for the state to defend.
And the attorneys then for the people challenging this law are going to argue for a much higher level of scrutiny.
Right. What they'll say is that, you know, these are regular people who are trying to raise their families, who are trying to do things like get insurance benefits that cover their partners and the kids that they're raising together, that they want to be able to register a car together without, you know, paying the big fee that Michigan has for sharing a vehicle with someone who's a non-family member, hospital visitation rights, stuff like that. They'll say that these are regular things that normal people do that's being denied to people in same-sex relationships. And because of that, the state really has to establish a pretty strong reason for denying them that right. That's the crux of the challenge to the same-sex marriage ban and the level of scrutiny that the challengers want the Supreme Court to apply.
Rick Pluta, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, pleasure, Gordon.
Rick Pluta is managing editor and Capital Bureau chief for the Michigan Public Radio Network. He joined us from Lansing. Links with more information and longer versions of interviews on West Southwest can always be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.